And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Well, tonight, you know, this is my last show of the year, and I have a great guest. It is Jim White, who has created a beautiful, and I mean a beautifully artistic, and I would almost call it a coffee table book. The book is called The World is a Safe Place. So I want to welcome you, Jim. I know that, you know, your bio is huge, and, you know, this is quite an honor, and, you know, we can talk about, well, I'm just really excited to talk about the book, and as I told you, something sort of just briefly happened to me just before you came, so, you know, it's a really ironic topic, but welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lori, and happy holidays to you. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited to be on the show and talk to you, and go into each other's psyches a little bit and talk about the world and the world being a safe place, the book, me, anything you want to talk about, I'm happy to go for it.
Let's talk about the fact that it is an incredibly beautiful book.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You know, the concept in terms of putting the package together, I think we're so used to, at least in America anyway, being packaged to, and we can disregard some packaging and look at other packaging. And I wanted to put something together, a piece of beauty, but it didn't have too much information on the outside. You know, as you know, the book itself is just white. It doesn't have any words on it. Just has a little bit of a geographic shape in the form of several triangles there, which form a trapezoid. And that makes people curious. And if it's sitting on the table, they usually pick it up, and they start to thumb through the pages. And all the photographs in the book are images, some of them common, some of them things on the street, from where I live in downtown Los Angeles. So there's some curiosity people start to do, and then they get into the text a little bit, and they start to go on a journey. Basically, it's my story leading them through experiences and things that happened in my life. And the idea was to make it small, condensed, but very, very powerful.
And it is. I mean, it is very, very powerful. I mean, I'm really, you know, you can read it very quickly if you want, or you can, you know, just allow yourself the opportunity to sort of explore it in a different way. Obviously, by doing an interview, you have to sort of read things and try. And I'm one of these people that actually enjoy reading all of the books. So, but I really like this. And I love that you dedicated this book to all the people in the world who seek answers and the truth and who are not afraid by what they find. I love that.
Oh, thank you. And what they find, if they look hard enough, in my mind, is, you know, the greatest entity in the universe, and it's love. And it's everywhere if you look for it. And it's in the most obscure places, and it's in the most blatant places, and it's everywhere. But you really have to look for it a lot, especially in today's society where we're continually bombarded with bad news. And you see it all the time, you know, on the news. I watched it this morning. I did a television spot back in, I think it was back in May, in the hometown where I'm from, near Omaha, Nebraska. I'm actually from Iowa. We like to call Iowa the acronym Idiots Out Wandering Around. And we joke about that. And right before I was going to go on the television spot, I was sitting in the production office, and I was watching the teleprompter, and it said, woman shot today, drug dealer, man caught stealing. There were all this bad news on the teleprompter. And it made me laugh, and I was with some of my friends and people helping with the production, and they said, you're going to go on TV right now and tell people the world's a safe place after you're reading all of that? And I said, you bet I am. Even more so, I'm even more energized by that in order to be able to put out an alternative message. Yeah. Because even with all of those things that are happening, and if we use natural disasters, for instance, if you talk about Haiti or the earthquake in Chile and the things that happened, inside of all of those things, something good is happening. Somebody's helping somebody. Somebody's feeding somebody. Somebody's healing somebody. I was actually in New York City when 9/11 happened. I was living there at the time, and I watched the event unfold. And my profession is I'm in human resources. Human resources. So I actually like to help people. And I was immediately drawn down to the epicenter of, you know, Ground Zero. And I just ran down there. I mean, as fast as I could, I got out of the building and ran down and started helping people. And have you ever lived in New York City?
I have not, no.
It can be a challenging place. Mm-hmm. And it's horns honking and cars and hustle and bustle. It was amazing in the aftermath of the calm and peace that was going on.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard that.
It was incredible.
Yeah, I've heard that that was the one piece that, you know, nobody really expected and was quite a surprise, but that, you know, how people united and came together.
Yeah, it was fantastic. People were queuing properly to get into the grocery store. All the horns stopped honking. Mm-hmm. And the temperature of the mood dropped at least 10 degrees. Mm-hmm. People were kind, and they were holding doors for each other, and they were opening things. And what it did inside of me, it changed the way I thought about what happens when bad things happen to people, because they are bad things, and they happen, and they hurt. And I like to call it in the book, So Real It Hurts. Mm-hmm. And that's about the experience of life. Until you have things happen to you, we can't live each other's experience. You know, we're speaking and you're reading my mind right now. I slow down to say that. My thoughts are coming off my brain through my neuropathways, through my biology, coming out my voice, coming across this headset and going into you. And we're learning from each other. I always like to use the analogy of the ant colony, A-N-T, that we touch feelers and we bring the message back, whatever it is, good, bad, ugly, back to the colony. And that message spreads throughout, in our technology now, Facebook, CNN, however we get our information, the newspaper. And I really want to put a message out there. What would the world be like if everybody thought everything was fine? What would the world look like if everybody thought it was a safe place? Because what happens is, as soon as I say, or you say, or somebody says, the world is a safe place, do you know what the immediate response is, usually?
Yeah, they come up with a billion different things to say, to prove to you, in their experience, that it's not.
Yeah, and they say that directly, right into my eyes, your eyes, and I have t-shirts that say, the world's a safe place, across the chest plate.
Nice.
And people will walk up to me and go, no, it's not. And I love that. I'm so happy they say that, because my immediate response with a really warm smile is, why do you think it's not a safe place? And then all of a sudden the dialogue starts between the individuals. Well, I don't know. It's just not. Well, could it be? And there we go. That's where negotiations start. Yeah. And people are left with a thought that they have to take an action on. I'm a real action-oriented guy. If you can't hear from my passion in my voice, if I'm walking down the street and I see some rubbish or trash on the street, I bend down and pick it up. Yes. It drives my friends crazy. They're like, could you just stop, please? But living here in California, where I live in Los Angeles, if those plastic bags get into the ocean, they end up into a marine mammal, or they end up littering the beach, and I'm responsible when I see a bag to pick it up. And if everybody was responsible for the way they thought about things, which I'm not trying to judge anybody and put anything into anybody's mind other than a suggestion, the world would change. I think it would.
I so agree with you. I'm pretty much the same way. I remember somebody saying, "Well, you do know that we have garbage people that will pick that up." And it's like, yeah, I do. But, like, you know, they have so much more that they have to do. Why, you know, why do we contribute? Why do we not pick it up? Oh, because somebody else's responsibility.
Yeah.
And the same with, you know, this bit about love. I mean, you know, it's so not so much that if we seek for it, I mean, it's there all the time. We are the ones that overlay everything with our fears and our worries and our anxiety and our frustration and our jealousies and all of the things that we sort of put over top of the love energy that is here all the time. We're the ones that are doing it. And you know, yes, things happen to people and we have absolutely no control over things, but we can be in charge of how we respond. And it's that aspect, it's that part of us that we can say, yeah, you know what, it can be a safe place. And yeah, this world is full of love. We just have things that are overlapping it and blocking it from being in our life.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. And, you know, it was funny. I have images flash in my mind, and one just flashed. I was walking in a sort of a destitute street in downtown Los Angeles last weekend, and there was a sort of, I have chain link fence over this parking lot that was all full of rubble and awful. And I walked by, and there was a crack in the asphalt, and I stopped and looked at it, and there was this amazing palm tree breaking through the dirty grungy asphalt coming up. It was the crack. It was causing the crack, and it was pushing itself up, and I could tell it was a palm tree by its leaves starting to open a little bit. And I thought, you know, that's exactly what's going on right now in our society. There's this sort of asphalt, if you can visualize that, and these chain link fence and rocks and things and rubble and debris all over, covering up love right now. But love conquers everything, and it's breaking through. Slowly but surely, like blades of grass, and the example I just gave of the palm tree coming up through the ground, and it's coming faster. And one prime example of it is the fact that you and I are having this conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm a businessman. I've been in business for 20 years, and I'm in Hollywood. I'm actually, I work in one of the studios, and I'm noticing, and very rapidly, conversation shifting, which used to be just completely harsh, rough business. People are talking about spirituality.
Yes.
They're talking about metaphysics. They're talking about quantum science. They're talking about other things. You can also see it starting to emerge through alternative therapies and yoga and holistic medicine and Reiki. These are terms that are coming out into the mainstream consciousness in regular dialogue in business meetings. And so when you look for that, you see it. And when you see it, it grows more and more and more. In Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, he talks about the emergence of flowers. And a book like The World's a Safe Place, people would have found it, I don't know, blasphemy maybe 10 years ago, or ridiculous, or I don't know what those words are. But just the fact that I've been able to have so many radio shows now a TV show, and distributed so many books all over the world is just, I think, a guarantee of what's coming. Or what's here.
Well, and you know, there has to be those people that lead the way. And certainly that's kind of what you leave us with. You leave us with, you know, these questions that you have always asked yourself to sort of start asking ourselves. And you know, I love that you talk that you're, you know, inherently curious. I mean, we all sort of, we either get caught in the rut of life and just sort of go day by day and not really think about it or not really try to become more conscious. We just sort of act like we're always just sort of in a state of reaction mostly, and we're not really as conscious as we like. There's so many of us that are trying to be more conscious, but we can still get caught up in these everyday moments where we're sort of just living and surviving and, you know, trying to get by. And then, you know, you always have these moments where you can feel this incredible love and you wonder, like, how and why would you ever not be in this place? Yet it happens to us all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting you should say that. Again, I was having visuals where it was flashing in my head a little bit. And, you know, it's one of the nice things about life in that context. You can jump into so many different paradigms and so many universes within your mind and within your experience, or you can just coast. And you can just be a zombie, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but you can be a zombie and you can just go through daily and go on autopilot, take your shower, come to work, go home, get up, and do all of that. Or you can jump into life. And when I was a little boy, I remember remembering. I don't know if you remember remembering, but it was where all of a sudden, I was probably 4 or 5, and I was like, I'm alive, and it scared me. And I didn't know what to do with it. I put my finger in my nose and my ear and touched myself all over, and I'm like, what is this to be alive? And it started a quest for me to try to understand what it really meant to be alive and to be a human being. And I did everything. I played football, and I did gymnastics, and I didn't like any of that. And I was a really smart kid in school, so everybody was mean to me, and I was kind of gangly and thin and all these sort of things. And I walked around going, you know what? I don't really want to be like anybody that I know, so who am I going to be? And then I started to go on the quest to create a Franken-gym, like a Frankenstein. I took a piece from this person who I really liked because she taught me something amazing, and I took something from him because I learned a skill that he had that I wanted to have. And I created the being that I am right now. And I also rejected things that I just didn't want to be. I saw that person who was not acting properly in my mind, and so I decided I would never do that. And I think that's what we do. I think we become, and this is in a good way, victims of our own choices that we make about ourselves. If you don't consciously get in to do that, you become the real victim of what other people want you to be. and then your teeth aren't white enough and your hair's too thin and you're not tall enough and you're too short. And believe me, I live in the glamour capital of the world here in Hollywood, and I see it every day in our studio. And I think, you know what? I'm going to choose who I want to be. I'm going to bring these things on or reject these things. And I'm going to choose the world inside of my head the way I want it to be. And for me, the world is a safe place.
Right. And, I mean, I get, you know, there are a lot of people that have a lot of examples that can prove to you that it's not a safe place. And
right.
I remember at one point I was doing some work with women and trying to get them to understand their own sexual energy and tantric energy, and you know, where they would start doing some of the very basic, just really breathing,
right.
And, you know, going into huge trauma and then exploring that with them and finding out that, you know, in their life, you know, life wasn't safe, that, you know, they made a choice to leave an abusive father only to go onto the streets and be abused on the streets. And,
correct.
You know, and we make these choices that put us in situations that are incredibly unsafe because we have this belief in our mind from our childhood that it isn't a safe world. And to
sure.
to help those people, to help them understand how it's not like we created this problem. We didn't create it. We certainly wouldn't have chosen it. However, we did make choices that made our life allowed some of our beliefs to be realized.
And I'm glad you're saying this, Lori, because it starts so early in society. If you look at a newborn baby or a one-year-old, they're full of wonderment and joy, and they're just this absorption machine trying to perceive what's happening around them, similar to myself when I was a child. And their joy, and they just cry if they want, or they scream, or they wet themselves, and they're just this pure expression. And then really early on, we imprint them, and I'm going to use Western society here in America. I've lived and worked in 27 countries, so you'll hear me reference different places where I've lived, but I'll stick with America for now. Pink is for girls, and blue is for boys, right away here. I mean, you know, you can't even think yet, and you're already labeled. And do you know why? Boys are blue and girls are pink?
You know, I don't think I've ever asked that question.
I have no idea. And nobody does. I've asked everybody why those, you know, boys could be green and girls could be yellow. I don't know. We just did that to them and to us. And right in the distinction occurs and it starts there. And then everything else, it was really amazing when I was probably, I think in first grade at school, the teacher put up this wonderful poster on the wall with doctors and nurses and lawyers and all these professions. And she had us run up and pick out what we wanted to be when we grew up. I was horrified. I didn't even know what those people did, but I felt the pressure so much that I picked up the fireman.
Nice.
I really didn't want to be a fireman, but I felt like I had to because otherwise I wouldn't fit in with everybody else. And we do that. And again, you know, it continues through our whole adult life. And the marketing of toothpaste and all the products and everything out there, we are bombarded by it. And I'm not surprised we don't think the world is not a safe place because we are just bombarded with it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we all have to do and what is happening, because I think we're all regurgitating reality TV, at least I know I am, we have to be saturated to the point. It's the human condition to go, you know what, it's enough. I heard something on the radio the other day about a new political party that's formed, and it's called the No Label Party.
Nice.
Did you hear about this?
No.
They're not calling themselves right. They're not calling themselves left. They don't want to call themselves anything. They just want to operate. And that's interesting because we're such name beasts. Hi, Lori. Hi, Jim. We immediately, and right away there's a connotation behind our names, and I'm an American, and you're not, and you're black and gay and straight and white, and we name things. And if you ask the tree what my name is, the tree is just going to keep growing. you're meaningless to me. I'm just going to keep growing. And that's what I'm here to do, is just to grow and enjoy the sun. And when it rains, I absorb the rain. And the tree doesn't even think about anything at all, in my mind. Maybe it does. I'm not sure. I've never been a tree, not in this lifetime. But and so that's where the fun comes. And you and I started this conversation, you know, talking about having fun. And I call it the party like no other. And that means when you can walk through the world And it takes a little practice. Believe me, I have my bad days. I don't want to sound like Pollyanna here. I have my bad days, too. You know, when you can walk through the world and just be neutral. Don't be sad. Don't be happy. But just look at it as the world. It opens up and it explodes into this place and all the mysteries of everything that you've ever wanted to see unfold. I couldn't wait, Lori. Got to tell you. I'm gonna sneak my age out here a little bit. Couldn't wait to turn 40 some years ago for the Masters of the Universe to give me the book that told me how it all works.
Right.
So, because I thought when you got to 40, they just gave you this book and they said, you know, here's how it works and this is what you do and here's how you become president and here's all the stuff. And I realized that nobody has that book.
It when did you matter. Realize that?
I realized it pretty quickly on when I started to listen to different people on TV and thinking, what are you on? You really believe that? And I realized that nobody knows what's going on. And, you know, and that gave me a lot of freedom that I didn't have to have expectation to be like anybody else. Or it gave me the courage to be able to put out a book that, you know, I've had some pretty tough situations with a book where people would get very upset and say, how can you say the world is a safe place when people are dying in a war?
Right.
And back to your situation, if you want to talk about what happened with your
Absolutely.
Issue with the internet.
Yeah. So this morning, I'm in a rush because I have your interview and I want to make sure I'm back in time. And I had a meeting, so I'm rushing. And I get home and I turn on my computer and I saw that I had an email from my bank. I clicked on the bank email. I mean, it looked legitimate. I wasn't thinking. I was, you know, kind of rushing in between things. And what does it say? It says my account's been deactivated. It said they'd reached me, and the only thing they'd reached me about was my business account card. I was supposed to activate it. And they kept calling me, and I didn't activate it because I had one card that had both my personal and my business on it. So I didn't think I really needed this business card. So then what happened is it says, you know, log on from here. So I go in. It goes the exact same page that it usually does. I'm putting in it did do a couple things that weren't normal. And I put in my account. I put in my password. And then it brings up this other page that I'm supposed to work with. And I'm thinking, well, why is it not letting me do this now? Like, I've put it in twice. It's not letting me do it. So then I call them, and I'm on the phone with, like, the head office, and they're not getting it at all. They're going, I don't know why this is doing this. You know, I'm not even getting this thing. It wasn't until they brought me to the branch, and we're talking now about 25 minutes later. The branch goes, you got an email? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, was there a link in the email? Is that where you went from? And I went, yes. He goes, I think that was a fraud. And it was like, oh, my God. I mean, it just, like, it fit everything into, like, there were a couple of things my intuition was telling me, but because I was in such a hurry, because I was trying to get this all done before the interview, which, you know, you never should do, I was thinking, because I thought it would be something really simple to do. So it was like, we're going to cancel both your cards because now, you know, the guys, they not only have your cards, they have your password, they have your PIN number. I'm going, oh, that's great. Nothing happened because I was on the phone while I was talking to them and trying to do it. So,
right.
I mean, nothing happened, so I was saved from the universe. But it just, the fact that, you know, something so simple and so it could have been disastrous had we not figured it out.
Well, and because of my job in human resources, I'm backtracking just a little bit. I naturally become a psychologist and a sociologist to some degree because my job here, and I've been in entertainment besides just here in Hollywood for many, many years, and I've heard every problem possibly I can imagine, and I'm knocking on wood right now because a new one will come through my door at any minute, but I never say never anymore that I've seen it all, but what happens in terms of situations, I'm not sure if you're familiar with reframing, and it's really where you take a situation and you look at it in a different way. Just the fact of what you've just told me now in the conversation, you've made me think about everything I need to do to make sure that doesn't happen to me.
Right.
And that everybody I know, I'll remind everybody, I've met this really great person on the phone today, her name is Lori, and hey, something happened to her, you probably want to make sure if you see that doesn't happen to you. So back to the analogy of the ant colony, you've just given me information that I'm going to share. And an almost tragic event to you is going to prevent something in the future from happening to somebody else. And eventually we're going to shut those folks down who are doing those things. So do you see how it works that way?
Yeah.
When you see something happening in a situation with the wars that are happening right now, those are examples of what we don't want our planet to be like.
Yeah.
And then we get to decide whether what planet we want to live on. Is it a warring planet, or is it a planet without war? In my mind, I personally do not want to be on a planet where there's war. Yeah. I personally do not want to be on a planet where there's disease. And I could go on and on and on with those things that I personally don't want the world to be like. And I always say personally, I do that intentionally, because that's what I want. If I try to impose something upon you, I actually start the war. I actually start it. And if you want to have a warring planet and I don't, then we have to negotiate and find out how to find the collaboration. And there's a key word here, collaboration versus compromise. If you compromise and I compromise, we both give up something. In collaboration, we find a way to work it out together. Have you heard of the Ministry of Peace at all? That Marianne Williamson?
Yes. I've been part of that.
Yeah, there's government agencies now in the United Kingdom and in Washington called the Ministry of Peace, where there are people who are just looking at how to make peace. How do we find peaceful solutions to conflict? And that's, in my mind, where we're starting to go. And again, you know, when you have, and in my book, The World is a Safe Place, and you can go to the website, theworldisasafeplace.com. I spelled out slow like that because people go, the world is a safe place.com. I talk about reading the world like a book. So let me give you an example. You and I are having a wonderful dialogue, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And this is probably in my day, a paragraph of my day. The whole page will be from when I woke up this morning to when I go to bed. And the whole month, maybe this whole month, is a chapter of experiences. And I look at the world that way. I'm learning constantly. It's funny, people say, well, you know, I'm going to go to school to learn. It's like, well, you're in school right now. We're in traffic and on the LA freeway. I'll tell you what, that's a classroom. And, you know, every conversation. And when you change your perception, going back to the analogy of living through your life as a zombie, just sort of walking through the world, to being in an interactive playground and experience of learning, you just have so much fun. I stop at a red light here in Los Angeles, and I get caught because I look over and see the leaves wiggling on a tree, and I get paralyzed and fascinated by the way the wind's moving the leaves, and then I start getting honked at, and people think I'm a madman, I know that, but I walk through like a child in the world, and everything fascinates me, and I still cry and scream and wet my pants like I'm a baby, but it's just a wonderful place to be. And I have to preface that because people hear me speak like this and they get a little annoyed with me. And I've even had people get angry with me because I'm happy. And I have to let everybody know I've had more stuff, and that's a capital S-T-U-F-F, happen than a lot of people have had in their lifetime. I've had 46 friends pass away from HIV. I've had 9 car accidents. I promised no more car accidents after the last one when I almost got killed. I've had 6 near-death experiences. I've had everything happen.
Wow.
And they've been tragic experiences, but I've always found something in them that was wonderful. I was in a motorcycle accident when I turned 45 in Brazil and went over the edge of a cliff and broke my leg in 5 places, and my right shoulder was dislocated, and they didn't know my shoulder was broken for about a week because my leg hurt so bad. And I laid in the hospital in New York City. They airlifted me from Rio to New York, and I was laying in the hospital thinking, do I really think the world is a safe place? Because this hurts. And the amazing thing that came out of that experience, number one, I stopped. I was forced to just lay there for about 4 weeks in recovery. I couldn't move, and which is really unusual for me because I'm a hyper kind of guy. I had never seen more love and outpouring towards me from my friends, my relatives, people I didn't know. People came from all over the world who I'd worked with to see me and sent me gifts. And I felt more love than I've ever felt in my whole entire life. And I wouldn't have had that if I hadn't have had that experience. And I learned to stay off motorcycles. So do you see how the process works in terms of reframing the situations? And I'm so glad you're laughing because laughter is heals all things. It heals all things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It could take you to a totally different place. But I'm just, I mean, you know, because a lot of people really like motorcycles. And I mean, I've never, I've I think I've been on one like when I was a child, and I've never gone on one. I don't know why it is, but when you said that, you know, now you'll stay away from motorcycles, I mean, that just seemed funny to me because there's so many people that, you know, really love motorcycles, and I can understand the thrill, and I can understand why they would, you know, that freedom. I think that's part of it. It's that there's a freedom in a motorcycle that you don't get anywhere else, but holy crap, when something happens, and it's rarely the motorcycle that's ever at fault.
Well, it was user error in this case. I went off-roading and went off the beaten path and didn't have the proper gear on,
right.
And the other lesson I got from it, the older you get, it takes it a little longer to heal, and the pain's a little bit more real, so that was good. And my mother at the time, she was living in Iowa. She lives in Los Angeles now. When she came to the hospital to see me, she smiled and cried and felt yes. bad. And then she said, "Do you remember what I told you right before you left?" And I said, "Yeah, was it something like, be careful?" And she said, "Exactly." And so we had a good giggle about that. But, you know, again, I just I look through the world, and I see the world through choice. I see the world through choice. And when you see the world through choice, you have one. And I like to use the analogy of being on the freeway. If you want to go from Los Angeles to San Francisco, we have a freeway here called the 5. Everything has a number. You can just get on the 5, and you can be there in 6 hours. You go straight up. But anywhere along that freeway, you can get off on an exit. And you can take that exit down, and then you can turn off on a street, and then you can turn off on a laneway, and then you can go to someone's house, and you can open their door, and you can go in their living room, and you can go into their bedroom, and then go into the drawer in the nightstand. You can make life go as much detail as you want to in experience, or you can just stay on the freeway and get to the end of it as fast as you want. There was an amazing movie named Click. Did you ever hear about that
movie?
I
did. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see it?
I did.
And it, you know what it was about. It was about a magic remote control where you could fast forward your life through the bad parts.
Yeah.
And the lead character did that and got to the end of his life and then realized really the bad parts, and that's my term for this situation, the bad parts are where the richness lies. That's where the experiences are. That's the scars that you have, both emotional and physical on your body, are where the stories come from, and that's the richness and the quality of life. And I think the thing that we oversee sometimes is we're not alone on this planet, and the thing that impacts one of us impacts all of us. You know, people will say to me, "Well, you know, global warming's coming, and you know, what do you think about that?" And I'm like, "Well, if we don't start listening to the fact that we're all one species together, all one collective consciousness, we're going to be shown that we're going to all have to work together to be able to solve these problems." Mm-hmm. Just like what happened in 9/11. When the disaster happened, everybody helped each other. And I think that some of these global problems that we're all witness to, and consciousness is an amazing thing, Lori. If you show it something, it can't hide from it. If you see it, it's like a snapshot in your mind, and it's there. And you can drink and take pills, and you can try to, you know, walk around and not see it, but it's still there. And that means that you have to do something with whatever you've seen. You either ignore it, or you, in my case, pick up trash bags and take action on it, or whatever it is, but you have to do something about it. You have to make a conscious choice. The great thing about living, for me, you can't do nothing. There's no such thing. Even if you try to do nothing, I thought this through once because I'm a kook and I was doing thought experiments. I thought, I'm going to do nothing. And I thought, how do you do that? I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to go sit on a park bench in Central Park in New York and sit there and do nothing and just see what happens. You can't do it. You can just sit there and then something's happening. There's things around you and pretty soon the cops come and then they try to take you away and then people ask you for money. I don't know, all these things that can happen, but you can't do nothing. You can't just be complacent in the universe. It doesn't let you do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, really. I mean, it's the choice of whether you want to live. Now, I know that when we talk about this book, and I know that you've gotten probably lots of people, and I, you know, there's a big movement right now about being really authentic and learning acceptance and mm-hmm. learning, you know, to be, and it's an interesting thing because, yeah, you know, things happen. Kids die, and yeah. there is no real, you know, we don't often see the bigger picture, and we may not Correct. Always see the bigger picture. And so you can understand why some people get, you know, really, really passionate about a topic such as the world is a safe place, because
Right.
there are so many, again, examples that they can prove to you that it is not a safe place.
Right.
And yet when we look at our choices, when we look at, you know, our responses and whether we can respond instead of react, when we can look at, you know, I like to do something where, you know, it when something happens, okay, so something's happened.
Right.
And, you know, what's the choice I have to make? I can react out of fear. I can, you know, and that will push me down a certain path, or I can choose to respond from a place of love, which is a completely opposite response, and it's one that's conscious, and it's one that will allow me to, you know, be in a completely different state of mind, as well as see what's happening around me in a different way. When a child dies, there's really no way that you can say, you know, one, the secret sort of made it like it was, you know, your responsibility, and that
Right.
people think of is means my fault.
Right.
And it's, you know, you can clearly not say it is your fault in any situation. At the same time, you can't say the world is a safe place, but you have to be able to find either a way to allow it to be, to have meaning in your life, or
Correct.
Like there's something that's still like the gift that can come from this, whether it, you know, brings the family closer together, or
Yeah.
you know, different things that you can come up with. But it is a challenging topic of conversation
Yeah.
because people do have these experiences.
Well,
know?
I'm glad you brought that up, because there were two nuggets I pulled from your sentences there. You know, one, there's a choice about how you feel, and you know, people talk a lot about free will, and you know, are we destined to be whatever, or is there free will? And I like to believe that our free will exists in the choices about how we feel and think about situations, everything that we do. And there's another experience too, because we are analytical beings, because we have a duality in our consciousness between right brain and left brain, and one side is the thought process, the other one is the feeling and expression side, and the thinking side gets you into trouble. It's wonderful for building pyramids. It makes great skyscrapers and freeways, and it's good for doing 1 + 1 = 2. But if you let it rule your life, you will think yourself into oblivion, and you will think yourself into a state of not having the answers, because your thoughtful mind can't ever figure things out. And that's okay. And that's where it's okay to have, and I'll use the word, mystery, because we don't know everything that's happening. I'll give you a great example I like to use a lot. The microwave oven has always been here. Even when you and I were cave people, Lori, running from Tyrannosaurus Rex, and while we were looking at it thinking, do we have sex with it? Do we eat it? Do we run from it? If we thought too much, we were gone. So we were gone. We just, you know, we thought too much. But the technology of microwave ovens, the computers, the phone, that existed back then. We just hadn't thought about it yet. All the natural resources, everything that we have in the modern society here was there then. We just hadn't thought of it yet. We didn't know about it. So right now, where you and I are standing in 2011 or coming into 2011, you know, there are things that are invisible to us right now. We just haven't created them. There's this mystery. There's this void there that things come from creation. And also the explanation of why things are happening, why someone dies, why there are wars, why there are hurricanes, all that. There is probably an explanation somewhere that we just don't know yet, or maybe we never will know. And I'll give you a great example. I'm actively involved in preventing homelessness in downtown Los Angeles, where I lived. When I moved here, I was puzzled by the 4,000 homeless people sleeping on the street in my neighborhood, because I had never seen anything like it. I had never known Los Angeles to be this way, because I had never lived here before. I always thought of it as Beverly Hills and Hollywood and all of that. And I moved into a new downtown area that's going through massive renovation, and I was in shock. And I was walking around unzipping tents and having people scream at me, and I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, we're homeless. And I'm like, why? And I got really involved and engaged in the whole situation. And, nice. You know, people will say to me, well, they should just get a job. Oh, or why are they down on the street? And, you know, it's interesting. we can't live somebody else's experience. Back to me reading your mind through the phone and you reading my mind, we don't know anybody else's experience. We're not inside their body. And so why judge it? I don't call homeless people. I call them my neighbors. They're my neighbors. Because when we name, just like pink is for girls and blue is for boys, and those people are homeless over there, they become that. And then you treat them differently because they're not like you or me. They're homeless people. No, they're our neighbors. And so back into the whole piece of trying to say why something happens, why did the child die, that puts us in the power of judgment, and that we are God. And we have the power over life and death, and we have the power to know why that. And you know what? To me, that feels very arrogant. I don't know why the child died, and I might not ever know, and it's maybe something I never, ever will know, and that's okay. So I found a comfort level in, what's the serenity prayer about? I think you know what that is, about accepting things and changing things and knowing the difference between the two. And when our left brain mind kicks in and says, I want to know the answer of why it happened, that's when you start to become unhappy.
That's true.
In my opinion.
That's very, very true. I think our mind, you know, it's again part of this movement of learning how to be and learning to get out of our heads and more into our hearts, and making that choice between, do I choose, you know, am I going to react from a place of fear, or am I going to try and choose a place of love, and what would that look like, and how would that be different?
Yeah, and if you can't do either one of those, that's okay, because a lot of this is conditioning of yourself and creating who you want to be and training yourself and learning. And the reason why I have such a nice philosophy for myself, I read everything I possibly can, from Eckhart Tolle to Marianne Williamson to Neil Donald Walsh to the Bible, to the Quran, to the Kabbalah, you know, all of these things, because I read all of it, and again, I pull out the pieces of the story that I want to create for myself. And I pull from everybody. I love pieces of everybody. I like what Marianne Williamson says. She says, I love everybody on the planet. I just don't want to have lunch with everybody. And so you can love everybody, even the people who've done really cruel and horrible things to me. I've had some people do some things that I just stand paralyzed and go, did you just really do that? I'm just going to stay neutral, because I just can't even imagine that you would have done that to me. I don't want those people around me anymore in my life, but I still love them. I can't not love people. It's just inside of me that I want to love everything. I also do kind of an interesting exercise, too. When I look at the newspaper in the morning, and a lot of people say, I don't read the news, I don't watch that anymore. I do it in doses, but I also don't want to ignore what's happening. So I'll pick up the newspaper and I'll see a world leader, for instance, and I'll think, boy, what are you doing? But instead of pushing my conscious energy in the negative and thinking they're stupid or they're making bad decisions or all of those negative things you can think about anybody, I look at them in neutrality, and then I think, I don't agree with what you're doing, but I'm wishing you well. I'm wishing that you make the right decisions for all of us. I'm wishing that you make the right decisions for your people. I'm wishing that you can calm yourself. And I consciously put my energy out there towards that situation to make it better. When the Gulf oil spill happened and I saw it, and my guts just fell on the floor. When I saw that, I thought, oh, what have we done? And then I grabbed myself really quick, because I know how powerful I am. And I'm not just talking about me, how powerful we all are. And I looked at that live feed. Did you see the oil just spilling into the Gulf?
Yeah.
Did you get it? I just pushed in my mind, cap. I imagined a big cork being stuck in the hole. I'd do it for as long as I could concentrate on it to close it up. And I believe that the power of our consciousness, and some of this is quantum theory, the observer affects the observed, and the outside world is really just the inside world being projected outward. If we took that consciousness, and this is the big mystery question I'm going to throw out there for your listeners, Lori, if we took that consciousness and all 7 billion people on this planet, in whatever form we were able to, Chinese, Japanese, handwritten if we can't speak, any kind of language that we could put out there, and we all thought for a continued period of time, the world is a safe place, would it be? Could we all change the world by the way we think about it all simultaneously? And it's a great thought experiment.
Absolutely. And I totally agree that we certainly can if we can all, you know, really get to the place and believe it. We have to believe it. We can't we can't say it and not believe it, but yes.
So you hear me get my passion. I get very excited about it because I'm thinking about a way I can get to all 7 billion people besides in my thoughts. Maybe it's on a Coke can or... I was in Machu Picchu, several years back. Have you been to Peru? Have you been?
I have not yet, no.
Unbelievable. It's just a remarkable place. And I was with an anesthesiologist, dear friend of mine, and we hiked the Inca Trail for 10 days.
Nice.
Always bring a doctor with you. They have good drugs. And at the end of the day, I'm aching, and he's like, here, take that. And so we were really bright guys, right? You know, we're here hiking and tents and all this stuff, and I don't know what I was thinking. I'm fairly world-traveled, but I didn't realize it was the rainy season that we went. And it started raining, and I'm like, really raining, and then raining more. And it rained for 4 days straight, never letting up. And we had to tie ourselves to trees because there was this mudslide thing that came by. And he's like, this is a vacation. And it was funny when we finally got really out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. I mean, I don't know where the heck we were. There was a billboard for Coca-Cola.
No way.
And he looked at me, and I'm like, we couldn't even speak. We were paralyzed. So maybe Coke cans are the answer to changing the planet. I'm not sure.
I'm sure they'd love that. Yes.
Yeah, they'd like it. But hey, if you know if it works, if you can get it out there.
You know what? That's true.
You got to do it. I have these things I call inspiration cards, and they're sort of chapters. The way the book is broken up with chapters,
yes.
I've taken those pieces out, and they're on little cards. And
yes.
One of them says, it's time to make a wish.
Oh.
And I keep these cards with me. They're the size of business cards. And before the book actually got published, I would carry them around with me, and I'd put them in tip jars, or I'm a global litterer. I'd stick them in the airplane seat, or I'd pop them all over, and probably passed out a couple hundred of them at the time. And I ran into a dear friend who I grew up with I hadn't seen in 25 years, and we reconnected, and we were sitting chatting, and what have you been doing, what have you been doing, all this kind of stuff. And I pulled out one of the cards to talk about the project, and he turned pale and just stared straight at me, and I'm like, you don't think it's a good idea? What's wrong? What's wrong? And he's like, I have one of those. And I'm like, you do? And he pulled it out, and he had one of the cards, and we both sat paralyzed, and I said, where did you get it? And he said, a friend of mine in New York gave it to me. He goes, I didn't even know what it was. And then, where did you get yours? I'm like, well, I made them. And I knew I was on the right track.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
it was a good
amazing.
Message, so.
There's one part. I mean, your book really is really, again, beautiful book. You have little quotes throughout your book. And the quotes are really probably the most magical part. And, you know, you talk about magic and you talk about... you know, the angels that are around. I love the aspect, and, you know, I'm sure we've talked about it many times on my show, but you talk about the fact that we have all these contracts, and we have contracts with our parents and our family, and probably those are the biggest contracts we have anyway. Why don't we talk about that just a little bit?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's, you know, there's a couple of things in there about that piece of it. When you're reading something and looking at it, I wanted people to have, you know, takeaways. And pieces that they could just use and quote and run off on, you know, different things to be able to do that. And, you know, I believe that we're all contracted with each other. The fact that how you and I found each other, you know, we hadn't met before we spoke today, and there are 7 billion people plus people on the planet or whatever, and it's so odd that you can run into somebody in the most obscure place. Have you ever had that happen?
Oh, all the time, yeah.
Yeah, and like my friend who I hadn't seen in 25 years, and all the people in the inner circle around me, and, you know, the fact, like, with my parents, my mom and dad, the fact that they were even together and how they came from two very different worlds. I think, you know, obviously I write about that in the book, and
mm-hmm.
and how, and there was a gentleman I know who was a metaphysical man who actually puts people into a trance and has them sort of meditate on why they chose their parents. And it was kind of an interesting experience. I don't know if you've ever had that one before. And there's an actual physical, visual contract that rolled out while I was being hypnotized, and I could read it like a scroll of what my relationship was with my mom and my dad and why we were all together. And in the process... you have a choice while you're being in this hypnotic state is if you want to break that contract with your folks.
Mm.
And so you don't become them.
Yeah.
Because if you don't break the contract, you start to see your traits. Have you ever said something, God, I'm acting like my mother? and so we sort of did that process in breaking those contracts, even though I still have the relationships.
Right. And it's a very interesting thing, because then you get around to the questions of, you know, is there destiny? Is there fate? Do we have free will? Do we have choices that we can make? We certainly have choices that we can make.
You know what the answer is? You ready for this one?
Uh-huh.
Yes. and I'm being funny a little bit, but it's true. You know, what if, and I always like to put a what if there, because then that means I don't think I know. What if what we were living in is a reality machine, that anything that you wish for would come true, and it would appear, and there it was. I like to call it cooled down thought. And I think I read about that in the book, too. And cooled down thought is, if I asked you to design a beautiful crystal vase for me, beautiful, stunning thing. Can you visualize one right now? Can you mm-hmm. think of a beautiful crystal, maybe Lalique or something colorful in your mind? Can you see it?
Yep.
Then I would ask you, Lori, please, now that you can visualize what it is, will you get a piece of paper and will you sketch it out? And you start to draw it out and maybe do the specs and measurements or whatever. And are you a glass blower by any chance?
No.
Okay. Well, you could take glass blowing lessons if you wanted to, right? Or you could get the one that we knew in our small town. His name was Nino. He was Italian. Get him to blow some glass and make a vase for you. He takes the glass, he melts it down and molds it, blows it out, and then cools it and puts it on your table. That's our consciousness creating a thought and an idea and making it physical. And people don't think about it that way. They just go buy a car and drive it off the lot. But that car started out as somebody's concept, somebody's idea, and then they created it. So, now all of a sudden, we're very powerful beings because we can take physical items and create them through our thoughts. There's this great thing, okay, you're going to love this one, right? I'm reading the newspaper, and I read about this Jedi Training Master tool by Mattel or Milton Bradley. And I'm looking at it, and it's a tube with a ping pong ball inside of it. And you put on a headset, and it picks up your brain waves, and you can raise and lower the ball. Have you heard about this?
No, that's so cool.
So I go crazy, and I research it and find out the company is called NeuroSky. They're based in San Francisco. They have a chip that they've devised that Honda is very interested in, because you can think, open the trunk on the car, wow. And the trunk opens. And anything that can be operated with a regular remote control, your TV, your VCR, can be operated with this thought process chip. And they have a headset similar to the one I'm wearing now, speaking to you on the phone, but it has a third arm instead of your left ear, right ear, and then there's a little sensor, and it goes right in the middle of your forehead, and it picks up your brain waves. And you can train yourself on a computer screen to lower your mood, kind of like biofeedback,
right.
Or there are video games and you can levitate a car. And I thought, you know what, here we go.
Yeah.
We're moving now consciously from physicality into thought processes. And it is being introduced through tools and toys and things like that. But guess what, our thoughts are important, so we better hone in on them and make sure we're thinking the right things.
Wow, I mean, that's really fascinating, because I do remember Deepak Chopra coming out with a game a few years ago, and it was really, really fascinating, because it was, you know, measuring through your hand, and, you know, the temperature, and, you know, how calm you were getting, or whether what your energy was doing. And I found that really fascinating, because clearly, we are starting to create these things that are allowing us to have more awareness in you know, the thoughts that we have and our whole body chemistry and you know, how our thoughts are impacting our body and whether we're being relaxed or calm or anxious and how that impacts things around us.
And have you ever heard the expression, this is coming to mind now, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all?
Yeah.
How about this one? If you don't have anything good to think, don't think it at all. And, you know, again, walking through the world, if you just walked around, and I use this busy street in New York as a visual for us here on the radio and on the phone, you know what New York's like. And as you're walking down the streets and people are passing you, you can almost see what they're thinking by their facial expression. You can see they're thinking about getting to work on time or having to pay their bills or all that kind of stuff. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody was just walking around thinking the world's a safe place? I bet they'd all have smiles on their face.
Well, I mean, that's just it, right? That it's the things that we think about, the things that we believe, they affect our experience. And it's not so much, because it really isn't, like you say, everything is neutral. You know, things happen. They're neutral experiences. Yeah. It's how we think about the experience that creates the emotional responses and the emotional reactions to everything.
And the outcome, and it's okay. Here's the other part that I just love about being alive, is that people start to think things that make them unhappy, and then they feel bad that they're having those thoughts. But you know what? That's the human experience. And without those thoughts, whatever they are, the ones that make us feel uncomfortable, we wouldn't know the other ones. So I like to use the analogy, too, of hot water and cold water. If you didn't have both, you wouldn't know either, and you wouldn't know warm. There's a wonderful, wonderful sort of Buddhist message about the stringed instrument, the violin, the cello, the bass. If the instrument's strings are too loose, they won't play. It just doesn't play. If the instrument's strings are too tight, they snap. The perfect melody and the perfect harmony and everything in tune is when the string is just right and the bow across the string plays the music. And, you know, that can be called many things, enlightenment. In Maslow's world, it could be self-actualization. But that balance in the middle of all things is where the harmony is in our life. But in order to know that, you have to have a discord and you have to have a disharmony, because otherwise, how would you know those things exist? And when you look at it that way, it's not that you invite things to happen in your life, but you're welcoming when they do come instead of trying to put off what we all experience. I, again, in my human resources role, speak to people all day long. It's what I do. And very rarely does someone call and say, hey, I just wanted to call and tell you that I'm really happy here. I love working here. This is the best place in the world. And I don't want any more money, and I don't want a promotion. And please take all my days off away. I usually, if they come to see me live, the first thing I can tell on their face, I'm like, are you okay? Did the police know? Who else have you told? Sit down. And, you know, so I get to hear everybody's experiences, and mostly here at the workplace, it's work-related, but sometimes it drags into home. But I haven't met anybody, I think, in my whole existence, I'm trying to run through my head here, that's never had a problem. You know, we're all in the same place. And if that's the foundation for our existence, that we all have problems, that means that we should all work together to solve them, if that's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, if you're unhappy, be really unhappy. Enjoy the experience of unhappiness. Just get into the thick of it. And when I get a little blue or I get a little moody down there, I'm like, yay, I'm depressed, I think. Okay, here we go. Let's get really depressed. And let's bring it out to where I see all the woes of the world. Because I really like crying. I don't get to do it that often. But I like it. And when I feel it start to come, I'm like, okay. And I just think all these things to just make it worse. And usually what happens, I end up laughing at myself. And then I pull myself out of it. I'm like, oh, God, there you went through it again. And, you know, and here we are. I'm back being happy again. Mm. But that's the beauty of the existence of our being.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are so lucky. We have over 6 billion nerve cells on our body regulating temperature, listening to the sound, feeling things and touching things. And, you know, sometimes I have to close the door and lock myself in because I get overwhelmed by all of it. And, you know, and then we can go on a roller coaster, or we can swim in the ocean, and all these things that we can do. I like focusing on those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's really it. I mean, it's all about accepting everything that happens to us and not necessarily needing to change anything, but it's just our thoughts. It's just how we feel about it. It's just our responses to it that can allow it to be the world being a safe place, or the world being an unsafe place.
One of my super dear friends, a guy named Albert Einstein, wish he was still alive and I could have met him, said one of the most important decisions you'll ever make in your life is, do you live in a friendly or unfriendly universe? And, you know, it's a decision that every individual has to make for themselves, and maybe it changes throughout your lifetime off and on, and it's not something that's static. What I decided to do was I wanted to live in a safe place, and then I wanted to spread the word, to start conversations like the one we've just had, which is remarkable, and to put it in some form that where it could be distributed, where people could touch it and look at it and ask about it and feel it, and then let it be viral and let it take over. When an idea has come, like the microwave oven, everybody has one. The cell phone, everybody has one. And in my perfect world, everyone will have one of these books, and everyone will believe what the words inside of it are true, not because I wrote it, because they believe it for themselves.
Nice. Well, Jim White, you have been wonderful.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed this interview. I think your book is incredibly beautiful, and it makes you think. It makes you ask questions. It makes you just be a little bit more conscious and aware, and that's really all you can ever ask for.
That's all you can ever ask for. So happy holidays to you, Lori. I really appreciate the time and really enjoyed the conversation as well. And thank you so much about reminding me about identity theft. I'm going to go tell all my friends and make sure they all safeguard their passwords and don't click on any links.
Yeah, really. And again, people can reach you at
www.theworldisasafeplace.com. And all the information about the books there and contact information. You can email me directly at jim@theworldisasafeplace.com.
Nice. Thank you, Jim.
Great. Have a happy holiday, Lori. I really appreciate it.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.